You are listening to KJZZ's Here and Now. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix. The impact of rock and R&B music from the 1950s on is hard to measure. There was Motown, the British Invasion, folk, psychedelia, heavy metal. How do you narrow all of that down to 45 songs? That was Mark Meyer's task as he compiled the new book, Anatomy of a Song, the oral history of 45 iconic hits that changed rock, R&B, and pop. The collection begins in 1952 with Lottie Miss Claudie and closes with 1991's Losing My Religion by R.E.M. And Mark Meyers is with me for a few minutes to talk about Anatomy of a Song. Mark, do these 45 songs continue to have an impact on music and artists today?
Yeah, all of these songs influence the music rolling forward, and they continue to, you know, they continue to be in our hearts today. For the most part, even young kids who never grew up with this music, it's the poetry that's baked in. There's like a hidden artistic message in each of these songs that touches even people who didn't, you know, happen to buy these when they were kids. But the big thing here in terms of their influence, I mean, look at Walk This Way. It's the first merger of rap and hard rock. With Run DMC and Aerosmith in 1986. Or look at Heart of Glass with 1978 with Blondie. It's the first merger of disco and punk. So all of these songs, Street Fighting Man, all of these songs in the book have an influence on the music rolling forward.
Were you surprised at all by the thoughtfulness of these songwriters? Because it at least the people you included in this book had really given a lot of consideration to what made these songs come together for them.
Yeah, what we too often think of with these songs, with these 45s, is that it's just throwaway junk. It's just pop nonsense. It's cotton candy. There's no nutrition in there. But it turns out when I spoke with these guys and we got deep and we got into confessional, that there's so much artistry and there's so much poetry. I mean, these guys talked about these songs, whether it was Mick Jagger or Keith Richards or Stevie Wonder or Rod Stewart, no matter who it was, they talked about the songs that I asked them about as if they were talking about one of their own children. Enormous depth and enormous passion on their part.
One of the people who kind of surprised me, not because she was so outspoken and glib, but just the way she talked about White Rabbit was Grace Slick. You got so much good stuff out of her. Can you talk a little bit about the origins and the conversation you had with her?
Yeah, Grace Slick, I mean, you know, she's really the first female electric rock singer. There's enormous urgency in her voice. There's a commanding sound. And there's a feminism built into that sound that continues today. I mean, Pink, for example, I mean, that's a direct descendant of Grace Slick's sound. And White Rabbit was really a song that Grace told me she wrote to chastise adults who were sitting around drinking and you know, letting their kids have it for doing drugs. Now, I don't do drugs. I never did drugs. You know, so to me, drugs is neither here nor there. But from an artistic point of view, this is what she was arguing, that you know, White Rabbit was sort of a play off of Alice in Wonderland, and Grace's argument was that all of these stories that she was read as a kid had drugs in them, whether it's Peter Pan's fairy dust or the poppy field in The Wizard of Oz where they all fall down asleep, or going down the hole by Alice to find, you know, the White Rabbit, and she's taking drinking things and eating things and tall and small. So her argument was that, you know, this notion of going off on your own to experiment was something that she had learned as a kid thanks to adults reading her stories.
Well, there's even a great quote, which you also use on the book jacket, where she says, White Rabbit is a very good song. I'm not a genius, but I don't suck. My only complaint is the lyrics could have been stronger. More people should have been annoyed. And that, I think that takes into account what is a big part of the chapter of that book. Another one I find really intriguing was what you wrote about Light My Fire by The Doors. In a couple of aspects of it, one is the different influences that the different artists in the group came up with for that song, and also how they actually preferred, Jim Morrison at least, preferred the 2-minute and 52-second single to the 7-minute version that most of us are so familiar with.
Jim Morrison, here's the weird stuff about this song. It's like 6 weird things, but I'll tell you just a few weird things. The opening there is a Bach fugue that Ray Manzarek had practiced as a kid. He built that off of that. Then you've got Jim Morrison, you know, that great voice of his. Well, it turns out he was listening to Strangers in the Strangers in the Night album that entire year, you know, Frank Sinatra's album. Ray Manzarek also borrowed some feel from Blueberry Hill, Fats Domino, Blueberry Hill. But the weirdest thing I think I found is after talking to drummer John Densmore, I said, gosh, you know, there's something about your drumming that makes that main chorus section that's just so catchy. It's almost like you're playing a Latin beat. And he said, you know, I was. It's interesting you should pick up on that. Densmore said he loved Astrid Gilberto and Stan Getz's Girl from Ipanema. Loved it. And what you're hearing on there is he's got a stick across the snare drum and he's rapping out a bossa nova beat underneath everything on the rim. So the next time you listen to Light My Fire, you'll hear John Densmore playing a bossa nova, almost like a lounge bossa nova, underneath Jim Morrison's voice. Isn't that wild?
Yeah. Well, there's so much in Anatomy of a Song that I don't want to focus on what's not in, but I do have to ask you this question, because we have the Temptations and the Four Tops and the Rolling Stones and Pink Floyd, and I didn't realize Roger Waters actually even did interviews, so that was fascinating to read as well. But where are the Beatles? Mark, where are the Beatles?
Well, you know, here we go. I mean, as hard as I tried to get Paul McCartney to do an Anatomy with me, his management felt it wasn't a good fit at that particular point in time, that perhaps down the road we'd do it. And the same is true with Dylan. I wanted to get Bob Dylan and I wanted to get Bruce Springsteen. And they just felt, a lot of these guys, they just don't want to look backward. You know, they want to go back in time. Maybe it's superstition that if they talk too much about the past, they'll get locked into the past. Nobody will ever take them seriously going forward. But I am convinced that Paul McCartney is going to listen to this interview, Steve, and he's going to have an epiphany, and he's going to say to himself, you know, I've got to call this guy Mark. I've got to do an Anatomy of a Song with him. You know, this is so terrible that he doesn't have anything with me. So I'm convinced that my phone's going to ring one day, and Bob Dylan or Bruce Springsteen or Paul McCartney will be on the other end, and they'll do it.
Well, Mark, before I let you go in the last minute or so we have left, without putting you on the spot, the Beatles have been so influential, obviously Bob Dylan as well, but let me focus on the Beatles for this one. Is there a song, either by McCartney or if there's one that you, if you had a chance to talk with John Lennon or George Harrison, is there one of their songs you think would be especially perfect for this?
You know, if there's so many, I probably would want to talk with Paul McCartney about Maybe I'm Amazed, and that's, you know, just after he leaves the Beatles, because I believe that song was written about the Beatles' breakup. And I think so much of his other songs have been covered in endless books and Rolling Stone supplements that, you know, maybe there is nothing new in Yesterday, and maybe there is nothing new in She Loves You, and, you know, it's just a combination of things that made that happen. There's no involved story. But I have a funny feeling that Maybe I'm Amazed has a fascinating emotional story about the breakup and how Paul was feeling and how he wrote that song and the poetry and the art and the passion that went into writing that song and what he was trying to say. I think that's the song I'd like to interview him on.
Mark Myers is the author of the new book, Anatomy of a Song, The Oral History of 45 Iconic Hits That Changed Rock, R&B, and Pop. And Mark, thank you for the time. Take care.
Steve, you're a pro. Thanks so much.